Back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. We are always involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of rare coins, precious metals, all forms of scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. We deal in it all. Been here a long time. I consider 20 years a pretty fair amount of time. There's shops around I've seen advertised 30 years and stuff. They've had like, you know, four owners or whatever, and they're small. We're a high volume, low margin operation. Again, been here a solid 20 years, Christian owned and operated from the core. The business was built on that, prayed over, anointed, you name it. We built it for God. It's God's business. That's been the central theme of who we are from day one. We've been in a constant evolution to improve everything we can as we can. There's a lot of learning over the years. Years back, I had a manager who had Asperger's and made some mistakes and sometimes did things that, you know, we had to learn from. And over the years, we've even done everything we can in our power to try to constantly lower our pricing. We're always nationally competitive. We'll always meet or beat any national pricing on anything. And there's people also that'll claim that. I've heard like Roslyn Capital will run ads on TV where they say we'll beat any price on any coin at any time. I've been doing this 20 years. That's not possible because they're commission-based organization. They tell you that to get you in the door, and I don't know how many people out there would pick up the phone or send their money across the United States and wait, but I'm just telling you, when it comes to investing wisely in a biblical manner, we're here. We're the best. We've been doing it a long time. We have honesty, integrity, and professionalism, and every transaction is our motto. We're here. We're dedicated to you. We're here when you're buying. We're here when you're selling. If you have problems, we're here. We offer the highest rated privately held depository service. We're here. And it's important to maintain that friendship, that face-to-face contact. There's so many things about the internet that are changing. And I'll tell you, when you're buying, you know, investment vehicles, precious metals-based assets, the internet's not where you want to be. And just because you can agree on 99% of the truth with somebody doesn't mean the last percent is also in agreement. What I mean by that is this. For years, there was a radio show on by Goldline with Joe Battaglia. Interesting show. And, you know, a lot of good information. And for the basic person, it was pretty insightful. I listened to the show for years and, or not, you know, constantly, but, you know, they'd have callers and it was sort of like first grade level. They were always pumping up stuff and propping everybody up and, you know, kind of feeding the new guy coming in concept. Wasn't really a deep thinking radio show. However, you know, because people would hear all these truths about what's going on economically, they would automatically assume, well, the radio show's truth, therefore I like the company, therefore they must be fair. They were not fair. Their pricing is exorbitant. And they buried people. I mean, they just overpriced things drastically. And we believe there's a strong, hard, ethical line when you come to somebody and say, use the word investment, you should not be making very much money at all, because every penny that we make is hypothetically money that you're not making. It's at least close enough. We make our money when we buy. So if we're selling gold, say today at, you know, $1,250 an ounce, we're buying it about $1,230, or I guess it'd be about $1,225. So the discount is applied when we buy people say, well, you make money when you're buying and when you're selling. I'm like, that doesn't even make sense if you think about it. You can't make money when you're buying and when you're selling. You know, it just, the logic isn't there. But we make money when we discount when we buy, and we make the money when we sell. If you think of it as a $100 bill, you think of an ounce of gold or silver as a $100 bill. So someone comes into me with a $100 bill and says, here, I want to sell you my $100 bill. And I'm in the business of $100 bills. So even though it's a $100 bill, I still got to make a couple bucks on it. So I say, okay, well, I'll buy your $100 bill for $98. And then someone comes in and says, I want to buy a $100 bill. And I says, here's a $100 bill for $100. I just made $2, 2%. That's how we operate. We don't make money both directions. The problem with being in that business, the $100 bill is a fixed value other than inflation. What we deal in fluctuates. So we have to also hedge the fact that we're going to fluctuate. I mean, we bought like 30 ounces of platinum and 30 ounces of palladium a few days or last week from an individual, you know, sat on them overnight, and the market had a big, there was a big dump in palladium overnight. We had one of the bigger single day drops in palladium. It dropped like, I'd say, I don't know, 8%. So, you know, we went, we sold it. We, on platinum and palladium, we make about a 4% margin because it's more volatile, very good investment potential, but volatile. So in that case, we bought it. It went down 8%. We made 4%. So we lost 4%. That's just the nature of the beast. All I'm telling you folks is we're very honest, forthright, upfront on, you know, it just, I know you're like, oh yeah, sure. You know, you're going to sit there and prop your own business up. People who know me know I'm one of the straightest shooters you're ever going to meet. I'm not a con. I'm not a salesman. I want to put my money where my mouth is. Okay. I've been doing this a long time. I know what I'm doing. I want to treat people square and fair and upright. It's important to me when I go home at night, I don't have any hesitation. I don't have any regrets. I have no skeletons in the closet, and I don't have to look over my shoulder. This business, honestly, folks, is full of chivalry and deception. And it's an amazing business because we are dealing in God's money. And I've gone over it, and I'll go over it again. There is the there's so much supernatural influence on the precious metals based assets. God created you and me to value things of worth. Okay. We put value on things. Now, there are some people that don't have that as much as others. I dealt with a guy, you know, in a big construction deal a while ago. A charity hire, I'd call it, a guy who wanted a break, wanted to get started, and I let him do some construction work for me. Terrible. And he had no standards, none, absolutely none. Nothing, you know, crooked, upside down, clumps of paint, you know, stains, dents, didn't matter. He had no standards. That's the way he was made, I guess. But the majority of us value quality, and the only reason we don't have Donald Trump's luxury is because we don't have the money. And someone out there goes, well, money doesn't matter. And I don't, you know, that's not my point. My point is that God made us that way. When people become wealthy, what do? They surround themselves with good quality things. It doesn't mean they're sinners. It means that that's just the nature that God made us. Why am I talking about that? The reason I'm talking about this is because people say, well, how am I going to buy a loaf of bread with a chunk of gold when nukes are going off everywhere? Well, when nukes are going off everywhere, you're not going to be running around with a chunk of gold trying to buy a loaf of bread. I hate to break the news to you. You're not going to go to the grocery store and try to break off a chunk of your gold to buy a loaf of bread. If you recall from ice storm and wind storms we've had here, grocery stores empty out in a day when the power goes out. You're in toast city fast. You need to have a backup plan. You've got to have a survival plan. You've got to have survival food. I'm not saying to go crazy, but you've got to have a good week's worth of good food. You've got to have you know, Coleman burners, things that you can burn, you know, or cook with gas. You've got to have an option to heat, some good sleeping bags, you know, whatever. You've got to be prepared for the worst. And in America, we are gluttonous. We are so lazy because nothing bad's ever going to happen to us. Just like it says in Revelation, when Mystery Babylon goes down, you know, I sit as a queen and I shall never mourn. Well, folks, we have that attitude still, and we're numbing up again a little bit. I think we know that there's terrorist activity and stuff like that, but it's always out there happening to them, not to us. And we've got to realize, and I hate to tell you this, but the truth is it is a matter of time. We're going to experience all of it. Everyone, you know, throughout history, every civilization has gone through the brutality of it. You read the history even of Israel and Jerusalem, the brutal attacks, and it was one after the next. And it, you know, every single time it happened after really bad choices. And they were reaping what they sowed, sadly, but true. If you look at the history of Israel and, you know, the effects of sin, and the Bible really gives you a listing of how our behavior is directly proportional to the way God interacts with us. And we've got to always remember that. So where I was going on that is the fact that God created the heavens and the earth and man, and he put man in the garden. And I spoke, I think, Monday about the fact that he said that he put Adam in the garden to cultivate it and keep it. Okay, so Adam wasn't walking around in you know, ignorant bliss like we think, you know, or like people think heaven of angels on clouds with harps. You know, God said in the parable of talents I read Monday, you've been faithful with a few things, I'm going to put you in charge of many. When we go to heaven, folks, guess what? You got a job waiting you. You got stuff to do. You got activities for eternity. They're going to be fun. They're going to be good. God made us that way. God created us in his own image. Keyword created. God actively made. God's out. He's busy. He's creating. He's made us in his image, which means our brains are working. We want to do. We want to build. I am convinced, and this isn't the direction I intended to go, but that's my forte. I am absolutely convinced that the universe is just full of magnificent, incredible creations. I am convinced there's other forms of life out there, if you want to call it that. I don't know what it'd even be like, because there's other dimensions. We get into supernatural stuff. We get into angels and demons and, you know, and cherubim and the things that Ezekiel saw in heaven. And there are other beings all around the universe. There's over 6 trillion stars. All, you know, many of those have planets 40 billion light years across, you know, so magnificent. The magnitude is beyond our comprehension. So God's a busy guy. We're created in his image. So what he does is he creates man to do. He creates us to get active, to get to work, to enjoy life. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes that our work is our number one fulfillment. Our wife and family and friends and eating good food and hanging out is the rest of it. Simple as that. Solomon was the richest, most successful man ever. And he says, look, work hard, have good friends, enjoy yourself, drink some wine, eat some food. This is what he said. I know a lot of Christians are very anti-alcohol. I cannot argue against that. I cannot argue for it. I know that a lot of bad things come from alcohol. I know that it can be very dangerous. I've been to Israel. They do drink wine. However, you need to understand a few things. The Bible speaks out against strong drink, or I should say it warns against strong drink. And you also have to understand, for those out there that use the Bible as the defense of their wine consumption, the daily drinking wine that the Jews have used forever is a grape process that gets fermented very lightly, just enough to create a tiny amount of alcohol to kill all the bacteria and preserve it. The nice thing about having a tiny bit of alcohol in grape juice or a weak wine is it preserves wonderfully for a very long time, for, I don't know, maybe forever, some of it, but very, very long time. So they ferment it very lightly. They have their celebratory wine. That's the stronger stuff. And then we know about strong drink, which is interesting because they claim that, you know, certain hard liquors weren't made till later, and we won't get into that. The Bible kind of covers everything. But, you know, alcohol, I guess, you know, Solomon said have a glass of wine or a beer or whatever. I'm not a big drinker, but I think there's a time and a place for everything. When my dad died, I had a few drinks. I'll be honest, I had Christmas Eve was a tough day for me, and I had a few drinks because I was I was having a real tough day. But, you know, we've just got to do everything in moderation. It's very important that we realize that we have to do everything we do as a witness. We cannot be a stumbling block to others. There's very many things, you know, Paul said, there's very many things that are permissible, but they're not good and they're not right. We can do whatever we want as a believer. We have liberty within reason. There's sin. You can do whatever you want, but it's not good. It's not right. It can become sin. It's so important that you are concerned with the example that you set. And you've got to look at yourself honestly as a neighbor, as a friend, as a coworker. You represent Christ. Everything about you is being evaluated. If someone knows you're a Christian, if you come across self-righteous, if you come across arrogant and rude, or if you're flaky and you don't return phone calls, or your words no good, those things all get reflected on Christ if you claim to be a believer. We went to a church years back for a while that was, you know, just so satiated with legalism, the life of the church was dead. Smiles didn't exist. The sermons were dry and dead because everybody was under the magnifying glass. They let a pastor go because they said he misappropriated funds. What did he do? Well, they were remodeling the church. They ordered a bunch of TVs. They got an extra TV in at the church. They had one too many, or they decided not to use it. He took it home and put it up in his house. He thought, hey, extra TV paid for? No. The elders jumped his case, put all this pressure on him, hammered him so hard, and ran him off. I thought that was a little harsh. I think we have to be really careful as believers. You know, love conceals a sin. Love overlooks a sin. I'm not saying that was a sin, but what I am saying is, people who were rejected or who have experienced rejection in their life tend to think of God as a rejective God. A friend of mine who does a large ministry down south has a father who runs a couple churches. He rejected his son in a very harsh, cold, mean manner. He's got the whole family turned against him. It's a terrible, sad way. The kid, I guess he's probably 30 now, he's written books. He's just doing great. He's got a wonderful ministry. And his father, for some reason, he's a recovered alcoholic, but he rejected this poor boy so hard because he can't keep him under his thumb and control him. The kid's not rebellious. He's respectful. He honors his parents. It just shatters his heart. It's terrible. I tried to contact his father with a very scripturally inspired letter, and he mocked and derided me. It's sad. It's terrible. I don't understand it. You know, what father, when his son asks for, you know, a loaf of bread, will give him a stone or a snake or whatever the scripture says? It's our son. Where I'm going with that is his father, who runs a couple churches. He's bounced around a lot over the years. He's had different issues. He's had himself in a pastoral position with far too much authority, and he's absconded money from churches. He's sold churches, taken all the money, claiming he was going to open another church in other states in California for a while, and, you know, blew a bunch of the money on himself. And, you know, and then he comes to, you know, he goes to other cities and buys buildings and makes really bad impulsive financial decisions. He uses the God block. Everything he says he's doing, God told him, so you can't get in his way. He gets people as his mentors that are not near to him, that, you know, or that are just yes men. And as soon as they begin to disagree with something he's doing, he casts them out. He casts anybody out of his church that disagrees or, you know, doesn't follow in line. When he kicked his son out of the church, which, trust me, folks, I know this family well, the son did nothing. It's other than the father's just terrible dysfunction. The wife and kids follow him closely. I mean, like, in a terrifying way, kind of like the SS would follow Hitler, and they do his bidding for him. But when he kicked his son out, he went to people in the congregation and said, look, you're either with him or you're with me. And he wanted everybody to turn on his son. Trust me, folks, the things we do, it's terrible, isn't it? And why I'm going into this is simple. What, you know, he caused division in the church. The church has been struggling. They're blaming the son, on and on. My point is this. The son now, who's in ministry, was talking to me a while ago. He uses me in some level of mentorship. And he found out about a pastor through hearsay that was engaged in some inappropriate behavior. And he was going into this church with the sole goal of casting this guy out of the church, of basically eradicating him. There's another couple situations that have come up where that has been this kid's response, is you gotta cut him and throw him out. And I'm like, that's not scriptural. You know, they talk about, you know, the chastisement of the church and everything. That's an isolated scripture. There's a lot of scriptures about individual overlooking sin. It doesn't mean we tolerate it. It also says love keeps secrets and all that. It doesn't mean that we're harboring bad information. We're not aiding and abetting a felon. What we're doing is we're trying not to make waves. We're trying not to create trouble. And I've spoken to him about that and said, look, that's what your father did to you, and that's what you're trying to do. I personally went through that in my own life. My parents, you know, I got dropped off at a runaway home in eighth grade, got handed over as a ward of the state. Long story there, but the point is, I went through a period of time where I was very exclusionary. You cross me, you're gone. And somehow you get that embedded in you that's the way the system's supposed to work, because deep down as a child, you think that's what you deserve. When your parents do very harsh, mean, bad things to you as a child, somewhere inside, most of us think we deserve it. We take responsibility. My wife grew up in a hardcore alcoholic home, and she spent a lot of time blaming herself for things her dad would do, and she always thought if she was better, it'd make it better. You know, this is just what kids do, which is why when someone cheats on their quote-unquote spouse, if you have children, you are not cheating on your spouse. You're cheating on your children. And you need to keep that picture in your mind. If you're being unfaithful, you're being unfaithful to your children. If you're sitting there burrowing into pornography, you're burrowing into pornography against your children. Your children did not choose your relationship. You chose that for them. Okay? You had children. Your wife or husband made a conscious decision to join with you. If they get cast out or whatever, it's going to hurt, it's going to be bad, but they're adults, they can function themselves. Children did not choose the relationship, so you have an obligation to them. When you do things that is offending your husband or wife or separating you from them, you are separating yourself from your children at the same degree. They may not know, but you have to realize we live in a spiritual world. You know, we don't fight just against flesh and blood. We fight against the powers of in the principalities of the spirit world. We live in a spirit world. Like it or not, doesn't matter. There's consequences on both levels. You can hide it physically, but spiritually, it's having its effect. It's affecting your children. If you're living in sin and your children are at school, there's a spiritual connection there. We've all heard the stories of people, you know, when a loved one dies, they know. They don't have to be there. They know. I can't explain it to you, but I've experienced it myself. I know there's a connection there. So it's critical that we understand our obligation to one another in a spiritual fashion. And when you get, now that I've gone way off tangent on that, you have to understand when God creates a system and he says, you know, his scripture is very in depth on the complications of the system and the consequences of sin. As I said, Israel, you know, they reaped the consequences of their sin in the attacks on their country. We have a good thing going right now. We have mercy. We've got God's mercy shining on us right now. Contrary to what the media may want you to think, we have God's mercy on this nation. Contrary to what the media may want you to think, Donald Trump is God's choice for this nation. You have to realize, folks, he's not as crazy and mean and wacko as they say. You are receiving bad information. Even if you watch Fox News, which is supposed to be more conservative, it is not. There is a bias. There is a skew there. They are trying too hard to present a balanced approach in some cases, which isn't balanced, because there's times that you're dealing directly with the truth, but in order to conform to this world, they transform their message to become more godless and less righteous. They will try to empathize with the ungodly view of our system or our leaders that are godly. They will always try to filter them through this ungodly system. And when you start to look at what's going on out there, think about homosexuality, immorality, adultery, all these things that are, you know, these are things that are in the Ten Commandments, folks. And I'll tell you, back to the parent-child thing, you know, it's no accident that God put that parents or children should honor and obey and respect their parents in the Ten Commandments. I mean, you think, well, that's a family issue. That, you know, that kind of stays within the walls of our home. No, it doesn't. That is the absolute fabric of society. That is the building block of the next generation. We started to lose this. I mean, there's a whole stack up. There's the socialistic influence of the Great Depression under FDR, which came about because of the Federal Reserve. Hands down, bar none, no questions about it. Nothing like it had ever hit before. The Fed created it. That led us to World War II. The world was hurting, the world was broke. You know, we were looking for meaning and a cause. So then we enter into this great war, ramp up the country. Women start to serve at home while their husbands are gone. They begin to work in textile factories and metal fabrication, whatever, to build ammo, bullets, armory, whatever. The men come home. The women are working. They're, hey, look at this. It's kind of neat. We can get two incomes. I'm getting my military pay. Let's stick with it. We can have two cars instead of one. We can get a bigger house. Everything was kind of looking rosy at the time. And then what happens is society, economics adapt. This is all Keynesian economics, socialism. Everyone is a worker. There is no family structure. It does not encourage the family whatsoever. Socialism makes everyone equal. That's this identity, misidentity or confusion, whatever you want to call it, where women are equal to men. That's a lie. Thank God women are not equal to men, and they're so different and they're so wonderful. I mean, that's what softens the world for men. Children soften us more than anything. But what happened is, so now the women are working, the husbands are working, they're getting a little extra income. The cost of goods begins to go up because people have more disposable cash. Hyperinflation begins because we've got more income, more revenue. The Fed starts producing more dollars. Pretty soon we got inflation. And in a period of time, by the 60s, you see a lot more women working. You have the drug-induced hippie era kick in, equal rights. Women think they're fighting for equal rights, and all they've done is destroy the family. Now women are pumped with pride that they can work. That's more important to them is their career. Get that kid out of your belly and back into daycare as fast as you can so you can get back to work and start making money. This is how women think. I know my daughter just had a child a few months ago, and she's had to battle with all these things. And, you know, we're making the right choices, trust me. But this is the pressure that's on these kids from society. These kids grow up now without a parent, without a two-parent home. The divorce rate's so high, these parents are off working all day. The kids come home to an empty house. Many of them come home to single-parent families. So we've absolutely destroyed the moral fiber of this society. And we wonder why these kids are off the rails and off the hook. They don't have the moral fiber. We've got this situation where people are forced to labor just to get by. I mean, talk about scary. When we have a scenario where two parents, if there happen to be two parents, have to work to make ends meet, what's the kid supposed to do? That is not God's system of the nuclear family. It used to be terrible when a child lost a parent. I mean, functional or non-functional, I understand there's been problems through history. Marriage is tough. God even discusses divorce in the Bible. I get all that. This is nothing new for us. But I'm telling you, God's got a plan that works, and we've broken that plan. And now we're seeing the absolute demise of our society in incredible ways. I mean, it is the obstructionism of the Democratic Party. We've got this onslaught of Saul Alinskyism, rules for radicals, infiltrating our government, infiltrating everything we are. Mm-hmm. Obama, folks, he did damage to this nation like you cannot even believe. I mean, you probably really don't understand the level of damage that he did to this nation. It's terrifying. We really need to understand the concepts of what he's done. When you go through Saul Alinsky, now you might be like, who's Saul Alinsky? Saul Alinsky wrote a book in 71. Okay. He called himself a political scientist. Obama was very good friends with him. And so was Hillary. They consider him a political inspiration. They considered him a lot of things. He was demonic and satanic. In fact, in his book, which now I would say is probably one of the primary influences on the behavior of Obama, which is now the Democratic Party, he starts out with his dedication. His dedication says this, quote, "Lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical." So if we go back in all of written human history, who is the very, very first rebel? Satan. So he goes on, he says, "Lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical from all our legends, mythology, and history. The first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he won his own kingdom was Lucifer." He says, "All kudos and praise go to Lucifer." This is the man who has formed our current, you know, Obama community organizer, all based on Saul Alinskyism. He goes on and explains that the revolutionary, he calls the community organizers, the protesters, the youth of today, he calls them the revolutionary force, has two targets. He says those targets are, he says, morale as well as material. So you want to win the hearts, minds, and finances of people. Its young protagonists are one moment reminiscent of the idealistic early Christians, which we now reject, he says. So Christianity's crap. Yet they also urge violence and cry, burn the system down. They have no illusions about the system, but plenty of illusions about the way to change our world. It is to this point that I have written this book. So he is basically writing a book to encourage, teach, and lead people to destroy mayhem, anarchy. And he goes on about how to create mass organizations to seize power, and he says, and give it to the people. Destroy all corporations and leadership. Destroy wealth and redistribute it, he says. To realize the democratic dream of, he says, equality, justice, and peace. We've got a term, you know, there's terms out there called social justice. If you hear that term, run, because it's just a nice name for communism. He says, better to die on your feet than to live on your knees. In other words, don't submit. The Bible says submit to authority. Life is good when you do, and you rely on God. Let him raise you up. Let him be your intercessor. Now, granted, there's been some terrible things, and I'll tell you, God will inspire people to fight. Don't be fooled. God is the God of liberty and freedom. When slaves are being abused and misused, God will encourage them to rise up. The slaves had a tough go of it. There were plenty that didn't, but many, many did. But God is not a God of passivity and wimpiness. People watch what Jesus did, and they don't look at the whole context. Jesus did what he did because he had a message to spread. He knew that every single thing he did would be scrutinized through all of written human history until the end. Far more than any of our current politicians are concerned about. Many of our current politicians are concerned about every move they make and every step they take because they know it's going to be scrutinized in a most negative fashion. Donald Trump is under that same pressure. He's done some things that definitely have antagonized. He's kind of a master at some of it. But as we go on with Saul Alinsky's, he says, Saul Alinsky's tactics are based not on Stalin's revolutionary violence, but on the neo-Marxist strategies of Antonio Gramsci, whatever. And he goes on and explains all that. And he says, the end is what you want. The means is how you get it. Whatever it takes at any cost. Whenever we think about social change, the question of means and ends arises. The man of action views the issue of means and ends in pragmatic and strategic terms without emotion. He has no other problem. He thinks only of his actual resources and the possibilities of various choices, and on it goes. So he says the real arena is corrupt and bloody. You have to understand, this is Obama's friend, and Hillary said that she admires him. So as we go on, we've got quotes from Michelle Obama where she says things like, you know, she said, Barack stood up that day talking about a visit to Chicago neighborhoods and spoke words that have stayed with me ever since. He talked about the world as it is and the world as it should be. And all of us driven by a simple belief that the world as it is just won't do, that we have an obligation to fight for and change the world as it should be. So then we go on. I won't get much into this. You know, Obama was educated by Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky was crazy. I don't know how Obama could sit in the same room with him. I think Obama's a lot crazier than we realize. So we'll keep it simple. I can go about, you know, it goes into an organizer must stir up dissatisfaction and discontent among the masses. This is what Saul Alinsky says. An organizer must stir up dissatisfaction and discontent among the masses. This is what's going on. We've got so much discontent and dissatisfaction. People are agitated. They're angry. Folks, I just encourage you to contrast this in your mind with the Bible. Fruits of the Spirit are what? Love, joy, right? Peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. This is God's Spirit. God gives us a spirit of peace and contentedness and joy and patience. Saul Alinsky honors Lucifer at the beginning, and then he goes on to create a system that agitates and feeds of chaos and mayhem and anarchy and destruction. This is why we are seeing the radical obstructionism from the Democrats. Obama set the tone. I have spoken with lefties, folks. I have friends who have been blackballed by other friends because they voted for Trump. I know people who had friends that will not speak with them because they voted for Trump. In America, the land of the free, home of the brave, do brave people run away and slam doors? No. Brave people stand and fight. And I don't mean that physically. I mean they dialogue. They're not afraid of conversation. The left, folks, is afraid of conversation. The left thinks half of America is evil. The right thinks the other half is confused. There's a difference. There's a great big difference. So let's talk about Saul Alinsky's tactics real quick and see if you're seeing these in society now. And contrast those in your mind with what your understanding of God in the Bible is all about. Okay? So he starts out with power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. So what do? Deceive, right? It's deception. The Bible tells us to be honest and forthright, and you know, so it's just the opposite, and it's viewing everybody as the enemy. What's God tell us in the Bible? He says to pray for your enemies and, you know, and bless them and you know, feed them and clothe them and all these kinds of things. And this is saying, no, we need division, divisive spirits. And it's exactly contrary to my understanding of the Bible. He says, never go outside the expertise of your people. So they're not seeking wisdom and learning and truth. They're trying just to persuade and deceive again. This is all a system, a doctrine of sheer deception. This is a way to deceive, completely deceive. This is what they're doing. So this is basically taken over the thought processes of our youth. And it, you know, at first it was the community organizers, the Obamas of the world, the Michael Moores. Now it is becoming our youth. This is how they're thinking. This is what's motivating them. Number three says, whenever possible, go outside the expertise of the enemy. So you don't, again, you don't want to learn and seek wisdom. The thing that I think is concerning me the most about what I see is the Democratic Party at this point, with all of Trump's nominees and all this, is the approach that they've taken. And I think it failed for them in the election, in the campaign, is a lack of compromise and a lack of unity as Americans, okay? Now, as believers, conservatives, truth, you know, when I say compromise, that can be a dirty word. I don't mean compromising your morals or ethics or anything like that. What I mean is finding nice middle ground. Now, as believers, we have to be careful too, because I run into a lot of people, and I know people in politics, that believe they shouldn't compromise. There are issues that you don't ever compromise, okay? And it depends on where you stand. It depends on your position. I know a mayor is going to have to tolerate a lot different things than a congressman or senator, or even in a president should be more like a mayor in ways, because they represent all people. congressional representatives, they represent both those who voted them in and the rest of the constituency. So they have to represent the political majority that voted for them, but also the rights of the rest of the people. It's important that we realize we're representatives. But I think where we're really lacking now, and I honestly think the strategy of the left is so destructive because they refuse to compromise. They looked at what Trump did. Okay, they don't understand what happened. What happened was people were fed up. And Trump, although not overly articulate or the greatest orator at all, he hit a raw spot with people. The media wants you to think that he played a fast one on us, that he pulled a trick. Trump did not pull a trick. Trump just basically came out and real brashly and rudely told the truth, like when he was debating with Hillary. And she said, well, I would dread you ever being in control of the justice system in the United States. And Trump said, yeah, because you'd be in jail. It made people think, why does she have a right to break all these laws? And we have these poor military guys who took the picture of an inside of a submarine when they were 20 years old to show their buddies, and they're doing hard time. You really think the Russians, if they have need pictures of the inside of a sub, are going to get it from some kid? You know, no. We just have these reckless rules. Number four, make the enemy live up to his own book of rules. This is the twisting and spinning. You can kill them with this, for they can no more obey their own rules than the Christian church can live up to Christianity. This is what he says. He compares it to the fact that you as a believer, you can't live up to all the you know, rules and regulations put down by God. We know what the standards are. They're saying that nobody's perfect, and we're going to reveal that. What is the devil? He is the accuser. Saul Alinsky is the accuser. He's not forgiving and loving and grace-filled and motivational. And the Bible tells us that let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, except only that which is edifying to those who hear, to build up, to make better, to heal, to comfort. No, they mock and deride. They isolate. He goes through this, and at number five, you know, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. This is the devil. This is the accuser, to ridicule and destroy. This is what has infiltrated our system. We know in Timothy where it talks about the end time spirit, you know, of just anti-parent, anti-establishment. You know, they're going to be ungrateful and unholy and angry and disobedient and immoral. And you read this whole list and you're like, goodness, that's ridiculous. But it's true. And when people say, hey, this kind of stuff's been going on since the beginning, no, it has not. There has not. The only other presidential campaign, in my understanding, that had the level of tension of this one was, I think it was Jefferson and Adams. Some say Jackson's. But, you know, the point is, even then, there was levels of dignity. You don't touch the family, right? The left went after, you know, they've gone after Trump's kids. There's just vitriol. Yes, I'm biased. Yes, I see it my way. I don't get it, okay? I want more than anything to have God's wisdom and truth, black and white views in my head. I want to see the truth, and I pray for it. And the more I pray, the more I see the way I do, because I hope, believe, and think that as I grow closer to God, I see more and more his view of things. With God, there are truths. There is bias. There's a good bias. Not all bias is bad. You know, and I mean, it's terrible when Dan Rather, the ABC News correspondent who's been around for decades, comes out and says he's convinced that he's unbiased. He believes that. And he's so biased to the left, it's sickening. That is the power of deception. When I went through college and English courses, they taught us the difference between opinion and fact. Not that that's a profound concept, but they made us investigate writing after writing after writing and determine what's opinion and what's fact, what's opinion and what's fact. Because journalists are supposed to deal only in fact. But they don't now. They deal in opinion. Headlines say, Trump continues his lies, you know. Trump the liar. These are New York headline, New York Times headlines, folks. It goes on and says, 6, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. Folks, you have to learn to enjoy righteousness, but for some reason, as a fallen race of humans, we enjoy a lot of things that are not good or right or holy or righteous. Am I wrong? Think of the things we do in the flesh. What do we enjoy in the flesh? Sexual immorality, you know, intoxication, gossip, jealousy, I don't know. But he's like, do things your people enjoy. Well, these are ungodly people that he's dealing with. He's preying on the godlessness of these people. And I want to touch on something else before we close out. I'll leave it at that. That's number 6. We'll try to pick it up Friday. It really has gotten to a point, folks, where it is godlessness versus godliness. That's what's going on here. Trump surrounded himself with wise, godly people. They say, the Democrats, oh, they're reprehensible, they're terrible, they're unbearable, I can't believe, I'm appalled how terrible they are. These are highly qualified, amazing men. They're really amazing men. They're demagoguing, okay? Demagoguing is when a political leader seeks support by appealing to popular desires and prejudices rather than using any form of rational argument. They're rabble-rousers, and they're just they're political agitators. They just appeal to prejudice. They create prejudice. You're xenophobic, homophobic, racist, sexist, you know. This is the thing. This is what we've become. They've always got their spin. Where does the spin always come from? The left, the immorality, the godlessness. This is threatening our society more and more and more. We are at a civil war level of tension. They got racism risen up. They've got all these stupid minorities thinking that the left is their friends. They're using them. They're too dumb to know the difference. It's sad and it's scary, folks. People who believe in the Constitution and individual rights are the ones you want on your team, not people that think that the Constitution is something you change at a whim. And when they begin to buck nominees like Gorsuch for the Supreme Court, this guy has a track record of proven constitutional textualism. The guy absolutely believes what the Constitution says, and that's what he wants to do. He knows you're not supposed to legislate from the bench. We have a legislative branch, we have an executive branch, and we have a judicial branch. The judicial branch's job is not to legislate or execute. Just to judge, just to make judgment calls. The other branches change the laws if they're bad. And they need to be communicating amongst themselves and not getting so puffed up with pride they think they're more important than they are. And Obama manipulated the Supreme Court justices into ruling in favor of Obamacare strictly out of fear. Just out of fear of the reprisal of he and Eric Holder, the attorney general at the time. They came out and did a mutual public hearing or public, whatever you call it, news press conference, and they made it clear to the Supreme Court justices. They said, who are you to judge us? We're better than you. They said, how dare you cross our paths? You cross our paths, we will destroy you. And then Judge Roberts cowered and called it a tax, and we know what happened after that. Now we're repealing and replacing. What Trump is doing is cleaning up Obama's messes. The media's freaking out. He said, let's examine these 7 countries, refugees, etc. Give it some time. Make sure we're doing the right thing. These are countries identified by Obama. The media goes crazy. I probably don't need to tell you more. Folks, one thing I want to touch on. I don't have time, but the coin market goes in 10-year cycles. This is unbelievable how accurate it is. I can go all the way back to 30s, okay? I mean, we had a peak market in 87, the peak of the peak, okay? The market was bottomed out in 77, peaked out in 67, quiet in 57, believe it or not, peaked out in 47. 87 was a peak. 97 is when I was really getting into the market. Coins were cheap. I gobbled them up. I loved them. I was like, what's wrong with you people? You know, they're afraid of them. 2007, the coin market peaked out. 2017, right now. There has never been better value in numismatic coins. It's true. There are incredible values right now. Our wholesale evaluation guide has done some articles lately. The values are awesome. This is such a phenomenal time to build a portfolio. I cannot express to you. We've got the paper markets through the roof. We've got the metals have recessed. They're starting to show some strong awakening. Coins are at incredible value. You can buy, and I'm talking literally from 97 or from, 97 to 07, my coins that I invested in at personally went up 4 to 8 times. This is what we're talking about. If you are thinking, and I don't have time to explain everything that's going on financially and where we're heading, but I'm telling you, America will be saved for the next 4 to 8 years, but we're going to have some tough times. Coins Plus 444-0044 or toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. 401ks, IRAs, whatever you got, call us. This is a biblical, conservative way to preserve your wealth. We'll treat you right. You'll do well. I assure you. Our clients have a better long-term track record of performance financially than any sector of any market I've ever heard of. It's phenomenal. So I don't have time to cover some of the special stuff we've got available, but I will tell you, we've got just some incredible stuff that I've pulled out of my own 20-year stash. And anyway, give us a call. Let us talk to you more in depth. Let us build a portfolio. Thanks again for tuning in. Pray for the nation. I mean that. Pray for it. And speak up. Be strong. Take care. God bless. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you Friday. Bye-bye.